information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Appear to border
it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Radio reminds me of my home far away. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 222 of Media Monarchy. It's June 24th, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, the experiment and the incident. Sweat Lodge, censorship, apologies, and the Ark, cruelty control and poop burger allergies, canary collapse, mailed fist, Trident Tribunal, and LulzSec Intel, plus the breaking fun news purge, and so very much more, my friends. It's June 24th, 2011, episode 222 from MediaMonarchy.com. How can so much great music come out of one little country? Hailing from Scotland, that's the brand new single from Sons and Daughters. Their new fourth record on Domino Records is called Mirror Mirror, and I love it. Scotland, the home of a ton of my favorite bands, Franz Ferdinand, Belle and Sebastian, Boards of Canada, Jesus of Mary Chain, Idlewild, on and on. Ladies and gentlemen, let me formally welcome you to episode 222 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's June 24th, 2011, and my name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Broadcasting live, as always, every Friday morning, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and simulcast worldwide thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net. And, of course, we thank Radio23.org for the extra hosting. And you can get in touch with us any number of ways. Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Gmail, Skype, all of those with Media Monarchy as your username or keyword. I'd like to direct your attention to the donate button at the top right of the page. Your support helps keep Media Monarchy going and growing. As we mentioned last week, was it negative reinforcement? I took 2 weeks off and I got a ton of donations. Last week, back to it, no donations. I love you guys. I thank you for your support. You know it's not about money, but we're not trying to go into the red doing this and growing the operation. I don't see too many other notes or points of interest or shop talk to go over here. And that's good, because it's, of course, yet another jam-packed week. As we glance at the morning's news, top stories: Osama bin Laden, Justin Bieber, and Minot, North Dakota. And that sounds like the setup to a very bad, bad joke. Bin Laden was talking to terrorists. Mobile phone links Pakistan's ISI to Osama bin Laden's courier. Gosh, are you saying there's a connection between Al-Qaeda and the ISI? The Pakistani intelligence agency that was set up with the help of the Central Intelligence Agency? U.S. House defeats resolution authorizing U.S. military mission in Libya. And unfortunately, you know that that's not necessarily out of any anti-war stance. It's more out of, ooh, we don't like the guy in charge, and we're playing our partisan garbage. So you should know, perhaps new listeners, nonpartisan, wide open arms, big support. I don't tell you what to think. I try and just lay out paths of information for you to go do more research for yourself. And again, it's all about sharing it back. And that's how we'll all help each other learn how to fish, so we can catch our own fish. Obama to get involved in debt ceiling talks. G20 not biting off more than they can chew. And Japan's crippled power plant faces more difficulties. We'll keep that page open. There generally is breaking news that happens while we're doing the show. Sometimes giving you news first. So, again, wherever you are in the world, however you are receiving this transmission, I thank you, and I appreciate you taking the time. And I'm proud to announce it has been published, the pilot episode of Navigating Netflix. You can go check out NavigatingNetflix.com. Myself, with the fine folks at TragedyAndHope.com, like Paul Verge, Richard Grove, Lisa Arbacheski, we put together the pilot episode of NavigatingNetflix.com, and it's called, appropriately enough, The Experiment. The first film the 2010 dramatization of the infamous Stanford Prison Experiment. So many more episodes that we're going to do that are on the schedule. So many great things coming up. So I implore you, check out NavigatingNetflix.com. Think of it as a book club for film. Everybody's on Netflix, but you're not finding the great stuff. And hopefully, that's what we're going to try and do. So, speaking of TragedyAndHope.com, they do an amazing podcast, PeaceRevolution.org. Episode 33 is available. Educational Initiations of Self. Integrity starts with you. Getting into education without enlightenment in the work of Manly P. Hall, and also referencing the newly published pilot episode of Navigating Netflix, The Experiment. We also have episode 6 of RemedyRadio.com. That's Paul Verge, a valedictorian, speaks about unschooling. Episode 6 of Remedy Radio focuses on unschooling, and the guest is famed valedictorian Erica Goldson, whose profound graduation speech, you may recall, critical of compulsory public education, went viral with over 600,000 views. Erica discusses her journey to awareness about the true nature of public education, how she's living life to find fulfillment through exploration and travel, and some good advice for young people in school or just out of school and feeling a little aimless. Now, you may recall last week we went over the first 5 episodes of RemedyRadio.com, the 5th of which features an interview with yours truly, Becoming Your Own Media Monarchy. We also have the latest episode, NewWorldNextWeek.com. This is episode 77 of the weekly video series between myself and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Alternative news, open source intelligence from Japan. We join forces each week to break down some of the most important developments going on. This week, Whole Foods prisoners, Greek canary, and media silence. Now we'll get into the lawsuit versus Whole Foods and the financial collapse of Greece on this episode. But you'll have to go to NewWorldNextWeek.com to check out the third story, 12 things that the mainstream media is being strangely quiet about right now. And some of those we will get to within this episode. But just another way to spread this information. I want to remind you, you may recall last week's episode, 221, we ran out of time. So the next day, last Saturday, June 18th, we recorded the B-side to episode 221, featuring the rest of the supersized news purge, cleaning up all the updates that built up, like, I don't know, I was going to make some bad dental analogy, but no, I won't. Episode 221, and again, all these things you'll catch if you subscribe to the main feed from the show. feeds.feedburner.com/media monarchy, and you'll get all the links to all of our articles and posts and videos and audio and PDFs and the mixtapes and all of those things, but also the links to subscribe to the shows that we feature on the site, like Peace Revolution and Remedy Radio, or episode 191 from CorbettReport.com, How to Spin Gold from Straw. In Rumpelstiltskin, the Miller's daughter can rely on the magical dwarf to help her spin straw into gold for the king. But in reality, there are no magical dwarves. But there are monopolistic cartel capitalists who have found the way to make the public pay through the nose for commonplace items. Welcome to the realm of artificial scarcity. We also have other amazing and the latest Corporate Report interviews and videos. The Sunday Update video produced in conjunction with globalresearch.ca, NATO preparing ground war in Libya. And the Eye Opener produced in conjunction with Boiling Frogs, Sibel Edmonds, Secret FBI Storage Drive to Shield Evidence from FOIA, and the latest entry in the video series, The Last Word on, you may recall, The Last Word on Terrorism, Overpopulation, The Osama Deception. This time it's The Last Word on Snake Oil. Meet William Rockefeller, the snake oil salesman. Latest interviews, Pepe Escobar, Jesse Trinidad, Aaron Franz, all that and so much more. James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. The hardest working man I know in independent, non-commercial, alternative media. And as we wrap up now all our related alternative media that, again, as we always say, we're proud and humble enough to be associated with in some way, shape, or form. And we try not to take these connections for granted at all. Thankful for them. From right here in Portland, Oregon, my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. Weeknights on KXL 101.1 FM here in Portland. You can hit it worldwide, KXL.com. Every week, we post up all five articles with links to all five episodes. And again, you can subscribe to his show, get his articles, get his podcasts. Videos are coming out. I don't even have those linked up yet. Clyde was at the recent conspiracy conference that we went to in 2010. And I believe there's a video up of him talking with Anthony Hilder and some others, so probably more and more info will come out about that. But last week's episodes, Ab Eterno, The Ground Zero Incident, Kachina with guest Lloyd Pye, and Elenin for Extinction Level Event Notable Impact Nemesis, featuring guest Jason Martell. All of these independent alternative media hosts, they need your support. So whether we're one-man bands, like myself, or Corbett, or others, or even Clyde Lewis, who, yes, he's on a big radio station, but he ain't rich and he ain't getting rich. Fortunately, and it's not a surprise, I knew it was going to happen, he's number one in his new time slot. Just like he was number one in his previous time slot. But he still needs the support. This is the difference that can hopefully happen in a crumbling economy. Is that it hopefully won't all completely fall apart. If we can all think ahead a little bit and we can figure out how to readjust and redistribute our wealth, so to speak. And I'm speaking of voting with your dollar, giving money to things you support, taking money away from things that you do not, and also taking away the psychic energy that you give things. I'm digressing, my friends. Let's move into all the latest from just one of the many sites in the growing media monarchy kingdom, HolyHexes.com. Self-help guru convicted in Arizona sweat lodge deaths. This from CNN. Self-help guru James Ray has been convicted of negligent homicide in the deaths of three participants in an Arizona sweat lodge ceremony, but was found not guilty of manslaughter charges. The case will continue June 28th when the jury will convene to make a decision regarding aggravating circumstances in the case. Prosecutors claim that Ray's recklessness in operating the sweat lodge caused the deaths of Kirby Brown, 38, of Westtown, New York, James Shore, 40, of Milwaukee, and Elizabeth Marie Newman, 49, of Prior Lake, Minnesota. They died after participating in the ceremony organized and led by Ray in 2009. At least 15 others who took part in the sweat lodge ceremony became ill. More than 40 others were uninjured. Prosecutors argued that the lodge, made of willow trees and branches and covered with tarpaulins and blankets, was heated to a perilously high temperature, causing the participants to suffer dehydration and heat stroke. They also said Ray didn't monitor the temperature inside the lodge or the well-being of the participants and was indifferent to those clearly having trouble. Ray's lawyers countered that what happened was a tragic accident, not a crime. They asked witnesses who were in the sweat lodge whether they signed a release form warning them of the dangers. All replied that they signed, but some said they didn't read it. Ray's attorneys also suggested that exposure to an unknown toxin in the lodge, perhaps a pesticide, rat poison, or something in the type of wood used to heat the rocks could have caused the deaths. Event participants paid up to $10,000 to seek new areas of consciousness at the October 2009 Spiritual Warrior Retreat in the desert. According to trial testimony, many of them had previously attended international seminars by James Ray, the self-help guru now convicted in the Arizona Sweat Lodge deaths.
We, the jury, duly impaneled and sworn in the above-entitled action, and upon our oaths, do find the defendant, James Arthur Ray, on the offense of manslaughter as a result of the death of Herbie Brown as follows. Not guilty. We, the jury, duly impaneled and sworn in the above-entitled action, and upon our oaths, do find the defendant, James Arthur Ray, on the offense of negligent homicide as a result of the death of Herbie Brown as follows. Guilty. The above is the unanimous finding of the jury, signed foreman of the jury.
Catholic Farmville-style Facebook game unveiled. This from ncregister.com. SGR Games has created Vatican Wars, formerly known as Priestville, which I have to say I like much better. A new online Facebook game. Think of it as Mafia Wars meets the church. The game divides players into either Templars, socially conservative, or Crusaders, socially liberal, and then allows them to serve as Catholic priests, take positions on social issues, and elect a pope. According to a press release by SGR Games, the test run of the game involving 30,000 players had some shocking results. First, the game's creators were horrified by the lengths some players were willing to go to become pope. It was horrifying, said Cheyenne Ehrlich, founder of SGR Games. We had three reports of a player being blackmailed into quitting the race for Pope in the game, and the amount of player bullying we saw turned our stomachs. It was so awful that on several occasions, we considered ending the game. Ending the experiment. So, speaking of Templars, from the Telegraph, Knights Templar heirs demand apology from the Vatican. The last Grand Master of the warrior monks who fought in the Crusades, Jacques de Molay, was executed in Paris in 1314 on charges of heresy, black magic, and idolatry. His death was part of a concerted campaign to suppress the chivalric order by King Philip IV of France, who had grown suspicious of the Templars' powers and envious of their wealth. Although it was the French king who ordered de Molay to be put to death, the Templars have for centuries accused the church in Rome of complicity. Pope Clement V initiated an inquest into the order, which led to many knights being subjected to heresy trials before disbanding altogether. The movement was reborn in the early 19th century as a charitable organization and has branches around the world. The Italian chapter of the order is written to Pope Benedict, asking him to issue a pardon for Jacques de Molay and to acknowledge that he was a victim of false accusations. There was an enormous degree of complicity because Clement V, who was Pope at the time, was under huge pressure from King Philip. Walter Grandis, age 64, the current head of the Grand Prior, the Knights of Templar in Italy, told the Daily Telegraph, this was an appalling crime and a miscarriage of justice that the church allowed to happen. Wouldn't be the first or last time. We're asking for de Molay to be pardoned so that we can finally turn a page in history and work towards reconciliation, said Mr. Grandis, who, of course, recently wrote a book on the order called The Templars, The Real Secret, which I can find no evidence of. Knights Templar heirs demand apology from the Vatican. And we'll wrap it up with the hat trick. The Catholic hat trick. Woman arrested after stealing 780-year-old church relic. Long Beach police announced the arrest Thursday night. The stolen relic, a bone from St. Anthony's body, was housed in a 16th century reliquary, or case, which is used for the display of such relics. Typical reliquaries are made of gold or silver and are virtually priceless for their exquisite workmanship, not to mention the relics they contain. The police were contacted and they promptly began their search. A suspect was described as a woman in her late 30s who had been seen at all of Sunday's masses and who took what was described as an unusual interest in the relic. The break in the case came from surveillance video obtained from a nearby business. Good thing it was working. Police did not say what information from the video they used to identify the suspect, 41-year-old Maria Solis, who was arrested and questioned last Thursday. Police have not suggested a motive in the case. The parishioners of the church prayed for the return of the relic and were very grateful to see it return undamaged. Perhaps surprisingly, St. Anthony is the patron saint of lost things. We'll wrap up our HolyHexes.com coverage with the June 23rd pop culture news purge, influence, censorship, and Noah's Ark. And we'll begin from BeliefNet as churches call for U.S. to pull out of Afghanistan. As Obama prepared plans to bring a limited number of U.S. troops home from Afghanistan, a group of 40 religious leaders called for the president to, quote, bring the war in Afghanistan to an end, end quote. Signers of an open letter, including high-profile religious leaders like Sojourner's founder Jim Wallis, expressed frustration over the deteriorating state of affairs in Afghanistan and the rising military and civilian death toll, saying, the military situation is at best a stalemate. The Tuesday, June 21st letter acknowledged that legitimate, ethical, and moral issues are at stake in Afghanistan, including U.S. national security and women's rights, but said, quote, there is a better way than war to address these important issues, end quote. I suppose as a counterpoint to that, and we bemoan the lack of anti-war churches, perhaps it could be because evangelicals see declining influence in U.S. A new poll released Wednesday from the Pew Forum on Religious and Public Life seems to say just that, with the vast majority, 82% of U.S. evangelical leaders saying their influence on the country is declining. At the same time, their counterparts in Africa, Asia, and Latin America are far more optimistic. Meanwhile, back on TV, NBC apologizes for cutting Under God from the Pledge of Allegiance during the U.S. Open golf broadcast.
I pledge allegiance to the flag.
Freeze that! Boom!
Of the United States of America.
The virtues that have been passed down through generations that live on in the great halls of this country. And in the shadows of the nation's capital, Congressional Country Club is poised to welcome the latest winner of America's championship. It's the United States Open Championship.
Now, the fascinating thing about that, when I finally actually listened to the controversial clip, is not only do they edit, and you hopefully just noticed that, they don't just edit Under God out. They also edit out Indivisible, which in my mind seems a little bit more important, seeing as how we only added the Under God part, what, in like 1955? But the Indivisible part, I believe, was there from the beginning. Removing Indivisible, in my mind, plants the meme of just how divisible we really are. Irked viewers aren't buying NBC's apology for censoring Under God. NBC's decision to edit the word God from the Pledge of Allegiance during last week's coverage of the U.S. Open Golf Tournament has teed off thousands, including an Ohio congressman who wants the U.S. Golf Association to reconsider its relationship with the television network. Dutch populist Geert Wilders, and I'm probably mangling that name, now empowered after being acquitted of hate speech against Muslims, called it the fascist religion, Dutch populist politician Geert Wilders was acquitted of inciting hatred of Muslims in a court ruling on Thursday that may strengthen his political influence and exacerbate tensions over immigration policy. The case was seen by some as a test of free speech in a country which has a long tradition of tolerance and blunt talk where opposition to immigration, particularly from Muslim or predominantly Muslim countries, is on the rise. Instantly recognizable by his mane of dyed blonde hair, Wilders, 47, is one of the most outspoken critics of Islam and immigration in the Netherlands. His Freedom Party is now the third largest in Parliament, a measure of support for its anti-immigration stance, and is the minority government's chief ally. But many of Wilders' comments, such as likening Islam to Nazism, are socially divisive. And you may recall last week we covered the story of Jack Van Impe leaving his broadcast station over Chrislam. Finally on HolyHexes.com and finally on this June 23rd, Pop Culture News Purge, Influence, Censorship, and Noah's Ark will stay in the Netherlands as a Dutch man builds a full-size Noah's Ark.
Now to the ship that's making headlines around the world, a full-size replica of Noah's Ark under construction in the Netherlands. NBC's Janet Shamlian is there. Janet, good morning.
Hi, Lester. Good morning to you. We are about an hour outside of Amsterdam. It's a small town that's getting a lot of attention because what's being built here? It is a colossal Noah's Ark, getting so much attention. With all the construction going on, you might say it's a bit of a zoo.
It looks like something out of a movie, and it is Hollywood huge.
Get on the Ark! Everyone on the Ark now!
But this is not a scene from the comedy Evan Almighty.
It is a long way down, isn't it?
Looming large over a small river in the Netherlands, a massive creation inspired by, of all things, a bad dream.
I dreamed that part of Holland was flooded. Then the next day, I get the idea to build an Ark of Noah.
A builder by trade, Johan Wiebers has constructed a real-life Noah's Ark, built to biblical scale and using the ancient measure of cubits, a man's arm from his elbow to fingertips. In modern terms, it's the length of a football field and four stories high.
Unless you're standing right in front of it, it's hard to conceive just how big the Ark is. Think small cruise ship.
Designed as a tourist attraction with a religious message, it's been 3 years in the making. Now, months from finishing, they're down to the details.
They're all life-size.
All life-size. Unbelievable.
What did this cost?
$11,000.
For one elephant?
For one elephant only.
So you have a lot of money invested in fake animals, don't you?
You got to imagine, yeah.
Not all the animals are of the plastic variety.
Two chickens?
Yeah.
Johan says he'll eventually stock the Ark with more live pairs. Of course, there are some things you may not want two of. Johan's Ark has proven seaworthy, but how realistic is this Dutchman's dream of doom? Because of global warming, the concept of a flood happening here is not unheard of. Al Gore predicted as much in the movie An Inconvenient Truth.
If Greenland broke up and melted, this is what would happen to the sea level in the Netherlands. Absolutely devastating.
True to the story, our modern-day Noah even created an opening on the very top of the Ark for the release of the dove.
Go for it.
So what if the heavens do open and the predictions come to pass?
Could you escape a flood on this Ark if it happened?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. No.
What Johan is thinking is he'd like to take the Ark up the Thames next summer in advance of the Olympic Games in London. Lester, back to you.
Janet, thanks. Let's hope there's not 40 days of rain ahead.
Of course, what they fail to mention is that if you look in the Bible, you'll see that God says, well, I won't destroy the world again by water. And yes, of course, there are many other flood stories in many other religions. But I love it when a plan comes together, and I hope sometimes, I hope you guys appreciate how well things kind of fit together. And again, we laugh to not cry, and with all of these things, I hope that we find that being more aware takes away the fear. Fear or love, those are the choices. We return to the States and we leave the floods of Noah's Ark to the floods of America. As nuclear plants face floods, are we inches away from Fukushima, USA? Nuke plant close to being totally flooded but saved for now. Two U.S. nuclear electricity facilities, the Fort Calhoun and the Cooper nuclear plants in Nebraska, are facing the threat of rising floodwaters from the Missouri River. Though safety regulators insist the plants were designed to withstand flooding and no risk of disaster exists, the Federal Aviation Administration has been enforcing a no-fly zone over the Fort Calhoun plant since early this month, even though the plant has been shut down since early April for refueling. That may be due in part to a reportedly minor fire at the plant, which temporarily knocked out pumps that inject cool water into a pool of used nuclear fuel. Or it may be due to something else entirely. The FAA reportedly told Big Picture host Tom Hartman that it was maintaining the aircraft ban for security reasons, and the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission has insisted there was no danger to people in surrounding areas. But that still begs the question, why would anyone build a nuclear plant so close to a river or any other potentially dangerous region? Let's listen to former Portlander, former KPOJ Portland talk show host Tom Hartman. And when I saw this video, I was like, oh, Tom Hartman's on Russia Today now. Awesome. Is he doing that from Portland? Of course not. He moved to D.C. and now hosts The Big Picture, so let's listen to the clip of Tom Hartman discussing how we almost lost Nebraska.
After the Fukushima nuclear catastrophe in Japan, a lot of people wondered out loud just what the hell the Japanese were doing, building nuclear power plants along the coast of an area prone to earthquakes and tsunamis. It's as though they were just asking for this to happen. Who could have been so stupid? Surely here in the United States, we're a lot more careful with where we build our nuclear power plants, right? Well, no. This is the Fort Calhoun nuclear plant, just outside Nebraska, just outside Omaha, and in Nebraska. And no, it's not supposed to be completely surrounded by water. But I suppose that's what happens when you build a nuclear plant right in the middle of the floodplain of the Missouri River. Floodwaters from the rising Missouri River have settled at a foot and a half above where the plant sits. And the only thing stopping Fort Calhoun from flooding, just like Fukushima flooded, is a six-foot-high rubber wall surrounding the plant. But that's not the only nuclear power plant in danger. Just down the river in southeast Nebraska, the Cooper nuclear plant is also on the verge of flooding out. That plant sits at 903 feet above sea level, but on Sunday, floodwaters from the Missouri River peaked at 900 and a half feet, meaning just 2.5 feet stood between Nebraska and a Fukushima-like disaster. So yeah, we almost lost Nebraska over the weekend, and yet no one seems to know about it. Back on June 7th, when the floodwaters first started threatening the Fort Calhoun plant, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission received a notification of an unusual event, the lowest level warning on the NRC's four-stage disaster classification system. No big deal, they said. Keep moving. No droids in this car. But it does seem a little odd that since June 6th, the FAA has been enforcing a no-fly zone above the crippled plant. When asked about the no-fly zone, the FAA responded by saying it was put in place for security reasons that we can't reveal. Just like the no-fly zone over the BP oil spill, which successfully stopped both news reports and scientific analysis of the water over the spill. You know, whatever's going on in Nebraska, this is a warning that Fukushima could happen here in the United States with very little warning. Not only do we operate nuclear plants in flood basins in Nebraska, but we also have plants built on fault lines in California and in the path of tornadoes in the American Midwest. And for those who are more superstitious, there's the Diablo Canyon power plant in California. It's not only named after the devil, but it also sits on top of an Indian burial ground. So is it really that our nation's nuclear plants are more secure than Japan? Or are we just, so far, really, really lucky? Frankly, I think it's time to stop rolling the dice with nuclear power. In the last decade, Germany built the equivalent of 10 nuclear power plants by putting solar panels on the roofs of hundreds of thousands of homes. And with that renewable power, Germany has announced that they will completely close down every single nuclear plant in their nation. Just last week, voters in Italy took to the polls to reject, by a 95% to 5% margin, a plan to build nuclear power plants in that nation. And in Denmark, a country that, as far back as 1988, banned the construction of nuclear power after Chernobyl, more than 20% of their electricity is generated through wind power. And within a decade, that'll be a half, 50%. Japan has just announced that they're ditching nuclear power. Fairly obvious reasons. The Swiss have announced no more new nukes. Even China has suspended the construction of all new nuclear power plants there. But here in the United States, we're building rubber walls around our submerged nuclear plants and just praying that the waters don't keep rising. And in an environment that's growing increasingly volatile, with more flooding and more tornadoes thanks to global climate change, that strategy is almost certainly destined for failure. It's time to ditch nuclear power here in the United States. Look at what's going on in Nebraska right this very minute. And let's hope we're not too late.
Tom Hartman on Russia Today with his new show, The Big Picture. And the text we have posted up on MediaMonarchy.com comes from Raw Replay, where we grab that video. As nuclear plants face floods, are we inches away from Fukushima, USA? We have other related stories from the Wall Street Journal, from the Deutsche Press Agency, and from the New York Times and the Daily Mail. So, meanwhile, while that's going on in Nebraska, and we're not leaving there yet, but we're just adding in the other elements. From HamptonRoads.com out of Hampton, Virginia, Virginia's Surrey Nuclear Unit Number 2 restart stalls as Minot, North Dakota evacuates as record flood imminent. And we can glance at the breaking news and see that at least Minot, North Dakota is a trending news topic. Flood swamps low-lying areas of Minot, North Dakota. Raw video of Minot flooding from the air from the Associated Press. And you may recall we followed developments in Minot, North Dakota with connections to their Air Force base and the rogue B-52s and sleeping soldiers at the switch sending fuses and all those other things. But while all of that's going on, this Nebraska story, and we, I believe, have given you the thought that this isn't really being covered, this isn't really being mentioned. We referenced this on the latest episode, 77 of NewWorldNextWeek.com. But in putting together and compiling this show and grabbing some clips, they all ended up coming from Russia Today. So that first one, Tom Hartman, The Big Picture on Russia Today. And as we get our other related Nebraska nuke updates and our other biowars and EnviroHealth stories that we'll go over in just a moment, why the media blackout on the nuke incident at Fort Calhoun?
All right, I want to switch gears now and talk about an issue that a few of you, our viewers, have been asking us to shed some light on. It's an issue that not many news organizations are talking about at all. And this time it involves the Fort Calhoun nuclear plant in Nebraska. About 2 weeks ago, there was a fire inside the plant that at the time knocked out the cooling system in certain parts. Officials there say it was restored within about 90 minutes. But now there's cause for new concern. Take a look. This is the rising Missouri River. It has flooded the area, and experts, including the power company, says that high volumes of water could pose a threat to the electric system. There has been an ongoing no-fly zone here as well, but officials say it has nothing to do with potential radiation that could be being released from the plant. In fact, they say everything at the plant is just fine. Now, this situation may not be the same as what we've been seeing unfolding at the Fukushima nuclear plant in Japan. But you'll remember there as well, several attempts by the government and officials to downplay the threat, to say everything was going to be fine, which we now know this wasn't true. So the point is, we should talk about it. There is reason enough to be suspicious. Joining me now is Tyson Slocum, director of the Public Citizens Energy Program. And Tyson, let's talk about this. What we're seeing in Fort Calhoun, the flooding around the nuclear plant, how much of a danger does this pose?
Well, it clearly poses a risk because the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is the agency that regulates all 104 nuclear power plants in the United States, raised the level of concern level for this plant to almost to a critical level. So it's clear that regulators in Washington, D.C. are concerned enough to raise the level of concern. But the bottom line here is that the lack of public information about our nuclear power plants, particularly after September 11, 2001, it was designed to keep critical information about vulnerable energy infrastructure like nuclear power plants away from terrorism. But what it's done is keep this critical information away from us so that we, the public, lawmakers, and journalists don't have quick, easy, independent access to important information about the operations and concerns about these plants. And so part of the problem with this situation has been the lack of clarity in some of the public statements by the operator of the nuclear power plant and by federal officials. And so getting more independent access, I think, is going to be critical.
But we do have some new information. In fact, a report just released today by the Associated Press, it was the culmination of a year-long investigation, found that there is a pretty tight, a comfortably close relationship, in my book, between the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and a lot of these power companies and the nuclear energy field in the United States. Basically, what this showed, this report, it was a very in-depth report. It showed that when you have things like, leaky valves, clogged up pipes, leaking radiation, instead of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission saying, all right, we need to figure out how to fix this, they say, you know what? The rules and regulations, they were just too conservative before. So let's loosen them, make them a little more lax. This, to me, is frightening.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Public Citizen has raised these concerns along with some members of Congress, like Representative Ed Markey, who's on the House Energy and Commerce Committee. He's been trying to get more information about the lack of toughness by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission on the domestic nuclear industry, particularly in light of what's happened in Japan. Now, in October, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission actually cited this Nebraska power plant for not having adequate safety and security measures to deal with flooding from the Missouri River. And they put the nuclear power plant on watch, on notice, essentially. The plant has allegedly come into compliance with those findings, but the fact is that the rising floodwaters do pose a risk. And from a bigger picture scenario here, it does raise the issue of whether or not nuclear power is viable going forward. There are a number of risks, and the Obama administration has committed significant taxpayer resources to build a new generation of nuclear power plants. And the question is this an affordable route? Are there more cost-effective, less risky alternatives like renewable energy and energy efficiency that might be able to meet our energy needs?
Now, as long as we're lining up the usual suspects, as we've heard the prior warnings mentioned in that clip, this from 21stCenturyWire.com, predictive drill or merely coincidence, the emergency preparedness video by Universal Education Systems available on an Egyptian website outlines the potential scope of nuclear disaster at Fort Calhoun. Foretelling, the video outlines the plume disaster at Fort Calhoun before it happened. We have more from theintelhub.com and Reuters, including now that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is now tracking the flooding at Calhoun and Cooper nuclear power plants. And before we move into our other related BioWars and EnviroHealth updates, we'll wrap it up with yet another hat trick. So this is the third clip from Russia Today, seemingly the only large outlet covering the situation in Nebraska, and it's the recently arrested for dancing in D.C. Adam Kokesh discussing nuclear freedom and nuclear safety.
We've been seeing different reports throughout the day of some flooding and some floodwaters rising around the Brownville Nuclear Power Plant just south of Omaha, Nebraska, where there are concerns that rising floodwaters will cause a potential event that would cause the nuclear plant to be shut down. There are concerns among people in the area as well that number of coal-fired plants plants and other nuclear facilities there are going to be affected by some of the recent weather issues that they're facing. And in some cases, that power will not be available to large areas. This is coming now on the heels of an Associated Press story today that's making the rounds and causing a big stir. And from Associated Press, I'd like to share a quote, time after time, officials at the United States Nuclear Regulatory Commission have decided that original regulations were too strict, arguing that safety margins could be eased without peril, according to records and interviews. Basically, it takes a look back at the history of nuclear power regulation here in the United States and how the government has given license to power plants operating and given them a sort of removed them from what would be free market accountability. And a lot of people say, well, you have to have more regulation, you have to have better regulation. And here's the problem with this, is that this is the analysis that you won't see anywhere on the mainstream media, because they're afraid to get away from the status paradigm of needing government for public safety. I mean, this came about after World War II, when we started seeing the rise of nuclear power in the United States, and regulatory industries or regulatory agencies were put in place because somehow the people were convinced nuclear power is such a threat, such a dangerous thing, you have to have the government look out for it. But what was really happening was the government wasn't regulating something that was already going on or making it safe, but rather removing the accountability that you would naturally have from the free market for nuclear power, for any economic activity. So in a true free market, if you wanted to open a nuclear power plant, you would have to have a certain amount of insurance in order for it to be at all feasible. And a role for government oversight at that level might be appropriate. But the gist of the story from the Associated Press says that all of these regulations have basically been bribed out of existence. And this is the problem with government being the regulatory force as opposed to the free market. See, in the free market, if you had to have accountability to insurance companies and to customers, when the risk level gets too high, when, as we see in the story, aging equipment at power plants becomes a threat in and of itself, it has to be replaced because no one will insure it without charging a lot more for the potential damage that it would cause.
Adam Kokesh of Adam versus the Man on Russia Today, our third clip covering the nuclear Nebraska situation. And we move to our other related updates from enenews.com, which I believe we mentioned to you last week is a great source for radiation and nuclear news. Canadian newspaper tries to get soil tested for radiation. Private companies, government agencies, and universities all refuse to get involved. Everything's fine. They don't even want to do the tests to make everybody shut up and stop worrying about the radiation and hot particles we're breathing in all around the world. Meanwhile, early this morning, a story I've not seen make the rounds. Huge 7.3 earthquake triggers a tsunami alert in the Alaskan Islands. Meanwhile, a new quake fault discovered in California could destroy a dam and cause floods. That comes from Gather.com. Meanwhile, Israel returns their nuclear waste to the U.S., and a Turk and an Israeli charged with organ trafficking in Kosovo. That's from VOAnews.com, and I don't believe that is a new instance. I believe that's the story we reported for you last year on the organ trafficking. Meanwhile, from AllGov.com, formaldehyde added to list of cancer-causing chemicals. And in response to the new FDA tobacco packs of cigarette warnings with graphic warnings and pictures, an interesting piece on naturalnews.com notes or accuses the FDA of unfairly maligning the tobacco plant with graphic new cigarette warning labels, basically saying tobacco is a plant that, of course, like any other natural item, can damage you if not used in moderation, and equating that with today's version of a chemical-laden cigarette. Our last note of BioWars EnviroHealth updates from Raw Replay yet again. North Carolina woman sterilized because state deemed her promiscuous. Eugenics in America never really went away. And a major component of the eugenics operation is the food. We now move to all our coverage on foodworldorder.com and a story from Bloomberg that we cover. Story number one on the most recent episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. Lawsuit says Whole Foods organic China veggies are actually from polluted prisons. And we note you won't hear about this in the Whole Foods parking lot. A play and a pun, and of course, always trying to grab people who are into the silly pop culture, internet, celebrity memes, and use those words to try and get a little bit more attention. You won't hear about this in the Whole Foods parking lot, so let's listen to a moment of that.
Yo, man. Yo, I know you see me here, dude. I've been waiting here like 10 minutes, man. No, no, no. This is my parking space, man. Now, what you need to do is put your little hybrid in reverse and go out the way you came in. What? Yo, it's about to get real in the Whole Foods parking lot, man.
It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. I got my steel and you know it gets sparked a lot. I'm on my grind, homie. It's on my mind, homie. These fools with clipboards are looking at me like they know me. It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. You know the deal with the little shopping carts they got. Check out what I say. It happens every day. It's how we live on the west side of L.A. I'm riding slow in my Prius. All leather, tinted windows. You can't see us. Everybody's trying to park. You can feel the tension. I'm in electric mode. Can't even hear the engine. Just then I saw a spot open up. My time is perfect. I'm creeping up. But then this other dude tried to steal it, going the wrong way. Yo, man, I've had a long day. It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot. Yeah, I got my steel and you know it gets sparked a lot. I'm on my grind, homie. It's on my mind, homie. Yeah. These fools with clipboards are looking at me like they know.
They don't know.
It's getting real in the Whole Foods parking lot.
Real.
Yeah, all right. That song is best kept short, and it's not nearly as good or as funny or as cutting or as well made as the song we played for you. I don't know now how long it's been, but it was called the Arlington Rap, all about acting like you're hard living in the whitey suburbs. So as we reference in the latest NewWorldNextWeek.com, Whole Foods is being sued for selling organic vegetables from China that were actually grown by slave labor in a poisonous place. For more on that story, go check out episode 77. It's also on youtube.com/Corby Report. And we'll continue with all our other stories on foodworldorder.com, like the June 23rd, Binge and Purge, Cruelty Control, and the cost-effective Clean 15 from Mother Jones. House rebukes looming FDA Frankenfish approval. Mother Jones calls it a salmon surprise. The House rebukes it. This is a bit of partisan playing, but again, sometimes it can actually benefit the people in a way. And I believe we said last week, sometimes the best thing we can hope for as a Congress is let's not do anything for the moment. Pesticide spraying near streams to expand under House bill. See? One hand giveth, the other hand taketh away, and the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. H.R. 872 lets farmers bury the Clean Water Act. More on that from the Los Angeles Times. Utah man accused of eating a live baby rat and posting the video online, and he's been charged with animal cruelty, and he has pled not guilty. More on that from, appropriately, the Barf blog. Chicago grocers accused of $500,000 food stamp fraud. Meanwhile, ConAgra Foods' net income increases but warns high costs could hurt future earnings. Jack in the Box, who we referenced last week as being the last major United States foodborne illness outbreak, they've now dropped toys from their kids' meals. And as ScienceNews.org notes, food choices matter in weight control. An interesting piece from the Bellingham Herald, the cost-effective way to feed the world. And as Germany's outbreak ebbs, questions linger. That's from foodsafetynews.com and grist.org, asking if the Clean 15 is just as toxic as the Dirty Dozen. And I believe last week we covered the Environmental Working Group released their 2011 Dirty Dozen list of the dirtiest pesticide-ridden produce. Apples topped the list. But a good note, separate shelves for GMOs now the law in Cyprus. And meanwhile, in the land of Oregon oddities, there was an op-ed in our own Oregonian that I saw in print just the other day. It's written from the editorial board of the Oregonian. Reevaluate Roundup. The Oregonian op-ed urges action from the Department of Agriculture. Good work from them, finally. Meanwhile, Oregon reaches $41 million multi-state settlement with GlaxoSmithKline over bad drugs. And our last bit of Oregon oddities. We tweeted this out last week when it happened. Twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. Portland's reservoir gets drained after drunk man urinates in it at a cost of $36,000. And isn't it really interesting to note that one man pees in the reservoir and it's a tens of thousands of dollars ordeal, but we see so many other things going on and we won't even test the soil because, oh, it's okay, don't worry. Fukushima's okay, don't worry. Calhoun's okay, don't worry. Not to mention the pharmaceuticals, the drugs, the poisons, the anti-androgens, all of the things that are in our water. What is made a big deal and what is swept under the rug? Or, as long as we're being scatological, what gets flushed down the toilet? Furthermore, on foodworldorder.com, the poop burger. Get it while it's hot and still a hoax. Scientist allegedly takes protein from human excrement. This from KPRC. Just in time for summer grilling, Japanese scientists say they have created synthetic meat derived from human excrement. The news that Mitsuyuki Ikeda of Okayama Laboratory perfected the meat streaked across the internet. Whether or not the whole breakthrough is a crafty online hoax remains to be seen, but if it's true, the finding, albeit disgusting, could have some bigger implications on food of the future. A now viral video examining the purported breakthrough, dubbed the Poop Burger, said the synthetic meat could be an answer to the high cost and environmental damage of industrial meat production. Ikeda and fellow researchers claim to have extracted protein from raw sewage to create the meat and added food coloring to make it appear red. Early taste tests say the meat tastes like beef. We have other links to the Daily Mail and links to that now viral video on YouTube. However, let's check out the other video that isn't going viral that breaks down the Poop Burger hoax.
Very disappointed in the world and the internet and its evil effects. The number one story right now on Yahoo is a story about a Japanese doctor named Mitsuyuki Ikeda, who's apparently discovered a way to turn human feces, poop, excrement, whatever you want to call it, into hamburger meat. And I'm just here to tell you that that is a hoax. That is fake. That is BS. That's bull****. That you guys are eating it up. And I was kind of furious at first when I found it, so many people were believing it. A lot of my friends actually made videos on it. But it's fake, and I'm going to tell you why. Okay. First of all, a very simple Google search for Ikeda Mitsuki will show you that there is no such person that works at Okayama Laboratories. There is some guy that works at the UN. There are a lot of references now to it because people are taking the story and propagating it. So it looks like he exists, but it's actually all pointing to articles about the video. And that's really the only source of this story. It's a YouTube video that was ripped off of LiveLeak. There are no reputable source materials. If a story is reputable, there would be at least one text article by some reputable source, but there isn't. They're all based on the videos. It's kind of incestuous that way. You know, everyone just pointing to each other. Yeah, he said it's true, so it must be true. Apparently, the only thing you guys need to believe this story is a guy wearing looking like he's a scientist of some sort, maybe wearing a white suit and proper hair. But there's a few reasons that video, I suspect that video is very strongly, confidently suspect that video is fake. One of them is the 1970s haircut of the scientist. Number two, the background, having all the papers in the back. Japan is not like that. It's much more computerized now. 20 years ago, yes, it was. When I first came to Japan, I live in Japan now. 20 years ago, it was like that. Not now.
So, whether or not it's a hoax, and it is, and we make the note, you know, get it while it's hot, and still a hoax, because, of course, Soylent Green is made of people. Why can't burgers be made of poop? But that video brings up so many other important points, such as the appeal to authority of, oh, he's got a white lab coat. It must be true. And the echo chamber of the internet, and something that myself, first and foremost, needs to always be careful of. What's real, and what's a hoax, and what's propaganda, and what's fake. And I can't do it all. But hopefully we try and suss it out and put it together for you. That was just the first couple minutes of that clip, and it goes on to break down more in depth of the poop burger. But let's move on, shall we, please, quickly. Thank you. Foodworldorder.com's next story. Medical News Today reporting on the 5.9 million kids in the U.S. that now have food allergies. Approximately 8% of U.S. children have some kind of food allergy. Researchers from Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine reported in the journal Pediatrics. 38.7% of those with a food allergy have a history of severe reactions, while 30.4% are allergic to several foods, the authors added. Symptoms in a severe reaction may include wheezing and anaphylaxis when the patient finds it hard to breathe and has an abrupt drop in blood pressure. The most common allergens for children were found to be peanuts, milk, and shellfish. Previous studies had estimated that 4% of U.S. kids have some kind of allergy, but now it's 8% or 5.9 million U.S. kids with a food allergy.
Now, the rising number of children with food allergies. A new study out today in the journal Pediatrics finds they're growing more common and more severe. The survey of nearly 40,000 U.S. parents found that nearly 8% of children under the age of 18, about 6 million of them, have a food allergy. Researchers also concluded that nearly 40% of those reactions are severe, and nearly one-third have sensitivities to more than one food. The study was sponsored by the Food Allergy Initiative, a research advocacy group. Dr. Ruchi Gupta is the lead author of the study. She's a pediatrician at Children's Memorial Hospital and an associate professor of pediatrics at Northwestern University School of Medicine. The first question that comes to mind, Dr. Gupta, is that this never used to happen. At least it didn't seem like it. We're talking about 6 million children with food allergies. Why so many now?
So that's a great question. And there's a lot of theories on why. But what's really important is that it does exist. And it's 1 out of every 13 kids, 2 in almost every classroom in America. A lot of kids have food allergy, and a lot of kids have severe food allergy.
How did you come up with these numbers?
We surveyed 40,000 families across the United States to get these numbers, and we were able to ask food allergy-specific questions, like what type of food allergy they have, what type of reactions, how it was diagnosed, and this allowed us to paint a really good picture of what food allergy looks like today.
So tell me what the answers were. What kind of food allergies are we talking about?
So the most common food allergy of all children with a food allergy, the most common food allergy was peanut allergy. About 25% of kids had a peanut allergy. After that, it was a milk allergy. About 21% of kids with a food allergy had a milk allergy. And then shellfish. And then other common food allergies include egg, wheat, soy, thin fish, and tree nuts.
Are children more likely to fall victim to these allergies because of their socioeconomic status or because of where they were raised or their racial background?
So that's a great question. And we do have data in this database to look at that. On first look, it looks like children who are African-American or Asian had a higher chance of having a food allergy, but they had a lower chance of being diagnosed with food allergy. Now, lower-income children had a lower chance of having a food allergy and a lower chance of being diagnosed with a food allergy. This starts to make us think that maybe some disparities exist, especially in the diagnosis of food allergy, maybe related to access to care, maybe related to not really understanding what a food allergy is, or many families maybe just avoiding the food and not discussing it with their physician, because currently there is no cure or preventative medicine a child can take who has a food allergy.
Now, a lot of people say allergy, so what, a rash, a sneeze, but your report finds severity. Describe what you mean by that.
So that's a very important point of this study. So what we found, allergy, I think the term is misleading. So, you know, allergy, a lot of people think of, you know, sneezing, runny, watery eyes for environmental allergies. And oftentimes for food allergies, people think of rash, hives, maybe vomiting or a little bit of swelling. And this can occur. This is a mild reaction, mild to moderate reaction for food allergy. But what we found was that 40%, so about 2 in every 5 kids who have a food allergy, actually have a severe reaction. And by severe reaction, we mean trouble breathing, throat closing, drop in blood pressure, pretty much any reaction that is life-threatening and can lead to death. And it has, and it does.
We have the link to the abstract of that research in the journal Pediatrics, but they ain't giving up the PDF for free. Finally, on foodworldorder.com from the New York Times, Bay Area underground market draws authorities' notice. For the past 2 years, the San Francisco underground market has served up bacon-laced chocolates, sea salt and chili truffles, and other oat fringe food. But on June 11th, the monthly market, which now draws more than 1,000 visitors, received an unwelcome serving of its own, a cease and desist order from the San Francisco Department of Public Health. The market had positioned itself as a members-only club to circumvent the department's retail food safety permitting process. They have significantly changed the scope of their operations, raising health concerns, said Dr. Rajiv Bhatia, the director of environmental health for the health department. If you have untrained vendors selling food to 1,200 people, you have a high-risk situation. The market, founded by ForageSF.com, a business dedicated to wild food, has been held in a warehouse-sized gallery space in the city's Mission District that has applied for a permit but not yet received one. The market started small but has become a kind of foodie phenomenon. The idea has been to provide an incubator for the Bay Area's fledgling food entrepreneurs, many of them young people who said they cannot afford the steep fees of a conventional farmer's market. The department has not received complaints of illness, Dr. Bhatia said. But given the popularity of the market, arguably no longer underground, it now does not qualify as a club, but it is a retail food establishment under state law and subject to the standard permit process. Bay Area underground market draws authorities' notice. And it really is a food world order. And it really is a shell game.
Took the fireworks and the vanity, the circuit board and the city streets, shooting stars swaying palm tree, laid it at the arbiter's feet. If I could change my mind, change the paradigm, prepare myself for another life, forgive myself for the many times I was cruel to something helpless and weak. But here I come, that heavy love, I'm never gonna move it alone. Here I come, that heavy love, tag it on a tenement wall. Here I come, that heavy love, someone gotta share in the load. Oh, here I come, that heavy love, I'm never gonna move it alone. Dressed in white, touched by something pure, death obsessed like a teenager, sold my tortured youth, pissed in vinegar. I'm still angry with no reason to be at the architect who imagines for that every man blessed Sisyphus, slipping steadily into madness. Now that's the only place to be free. But here come that heavy love, you're never gonna move it. sounds on oscilloscopes. Distorted facts I could never cope. My private life is an inside joke. No one will explain it to me. We'll be everything that we ever need. Everyone on the count of three. Everyone on the count of three. All together now. Here come that heavy load. We're never gonna move it alone. Heavy love, playing as a cylinder rolls. Here come that heavy love. I only wanna share in the load. Oh, here come that heavy love. I'm never gonna move it alone.
It's a shell game. The latest from Bright Eyes. Off the record, The People's Key. I can't remember if I played that or not before. I didn't find it in my records, and now that it's out there, I really don't care if I played it once before. Because I still love it, and it still gives me chills when the choir, the crowd comes in on Everyone on the Count of Three. I love it. You're listening to episode 222 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's June 24th, 2011. And my name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. We still have all the latest on CyberspaceWar.com yet to come, but let's dip in to the financial collapse of Greece, the canary in the coal mine for the global economy? Question mark. We covered this story, again, on the most recent episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, but let's break it down and get you up to date on the Greek canary.
Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou faces a confidence vote in his government today that could determine whether Greece becomes the first euro area country to default. For more, we are joined by Jacques Kallou. He's the chief European economist at the World Bank of Scotland, joining us from London. Thanks so much for joining us. And so much hinges on this confidence vote. If it does not happen for George Papandreou, what are we looking at here? Are we looking at default?
Well, I'm not actually expecting any bad news from the confidence vote overnight. So I haven't really looked into the unpredictable.
The other possibility.
So I think, yeah, exactly. So I think we're focusing more on the 28th of June vote, which is a much more important one and potentially has a higher risk of not going through. Although I do think that the baseline scenario is that it goes through. So I think tonight is not much of uncertainty, I don't think. But we obviously need to get the confirmation of that. But that's not where I'm focusing the attention just now. I think we need to get the 28th behind us, which opens up the door to the disbursement of the fifth tranche, and that's where the attention should be.
The 28th, when you're talking about 28th, you're talking about when they start voting on the austerity?
Yeah, next week, the austerity and privatization program needs to be approved, the details of which are currently still being negotiated in Athens with the Troika, and so we need the full draft of that program, and then it's going to get through Parliament. And the question there is whether the Parliament will get a backing or not.
The Greek government has narrowly survived a crucial confidence vote in Parliament. The new cabinet's next task will be to win enough support for controversial austerity measures designed to save the country from bankruptcy. Europe correspondent Philip Williams reports.
Outside the Parliament, the people with their message, no more cuts, sell-offs or sackings. But inside, the government had its own warning. Accept the new cabinet or face chaos. The betting was the Prime Minister would survive, and he did, but not by much. This is just the beginning of a much harder sell. To convince everyone, another round of savage cuts is not only desirable, but essential. But these people aren't listening anymore. What goodwill may have existed after the first round of cuts is rapidly evaporating.
Well, this is what was put to them 18 months ago. And they responded by saying, OK, we'll take the bitter pill. The bitter pill nearly killed them. And now they're being asked to hope for better results from a larger dosage of the same pill. And they're simply not prepared to do this.
And so already electricity workers have been on strike. Traffic is being brought to a standstill by protesters. as people lose faith in the ability of their politicians to find a way out of the mess.
It's at stake is the future of Greece. The danger that Greece is going to end up bankrupt is quite serious.
But while the government here says getting the next austerity package approved is essential, some believe default is the only way out. Others say that's far too risky and could lead to a default contagion that could damage everyone.
Now, of course, these debts are not ours. They were engineered by international banksters and interlocking interbred families, and it's their Ponzi scheme. So you heard the second part of that clip was the update that Greece's Papandreou survived the confidence vote, but you heard in the first part, I don't really care about the dog and pony show of it. I want to know what's going to happen with the June 28th austerity vote. And we'll add the warning of euphemistic language, whether it's allergies or austerity. So we have updates and other related sources for you from the Globe and Mail, as well USA Today, Sky News, The Guardian, and the economiccollapseblog.com. Let's get our other related econo crash updates as the Supreme Court takes a step closer to debtor's prison. This story comes from allgov.com and is a little too labyrinthine to get into, so I implore you to check it out for yourself. And isn't it related to this and to that and to the next thing? Walmart sex discrimination class action suit rejected. Meanwhile, unionized actors made anti-union video for Target. And a North Carolina man allegedly robs a bank of $1 to get health care in jail, or as I'm calling it, jail care.
A North Carolina man robs a bank for $1 so that he can be sent to prison to get free health care. Sound outlandish? Well, even the man himself, James Verone, admits it is that. In an interview with WCNC, Verone says he had no other options.
He says he has a growth of some sort on his chest, two ruptured discs, and a problem with his left foot. He's 59 years old and with no job and a depleted bank account. He thought jail was the best place he could go for medical care and a roof over his head. You wanted them to arrest you.
Oh, yeah. I went in knowing I'd go to jail.
Verone's local paper, the Gaston Gazette, notes the man has no criminal past. He worked for Coca-Cola 17 years. When his job there ended, he couldn't find steady work. His savings depleted. Verone researched how to rob a bank with the fewest consequences. Because he only demanded $1, he was charged with larceny from a person. Still a felony, the count doesn't carry as much jail time as bank robbery. Verone is considering an ultimatum if the penalty isn't great enough. He says the crime will happen again. The commentary has flowed in from the New York Times. As if conjured up by a presidential speechwriter to star in an anecdote about America's dysfunctional health insurance system, Mr. Verone explained that he was hoping for a 3-year sentence, which would give him a place to live and free health care until he was old enough to collect a Social Security check and buy a condo on the beach. Tweetdown has one reaction. Really? Rob a bank, go to jail for health care? This is what it has come down to. No citizen in a country like America should have to resort to robbing a damn bank to receive medical attention. Others are outraged, calling it out-and-out manipulation. But ZDNet notes, this isn't really new. Crime happens regularly by individuals who just want to have a roof over their head and food to eat. Naturally, while his plan is quite clever and innocent in nature, this will not sit well with a number of taxpayers, not just for the fact that the man had to do this in the first place, but that he could do it to get what he knew he would receive. Verona's bond was reduced from $100,000 to $2,000, but the Gaston Gazette notes he doesn't plan to pay it. By the way, Verone has already seen several nurses and a doctor since he was arrested. I'm Jim Flink for Newsy. Multiple sources, the real story.
A fascinating story. And what is this? The 21st century Otis the Drunk. Bank demolished man's house by mistake. Meanwhile, the surprise oil release rattles markets and investors. More on that from CNBC. Not sure how large this story has gotten, but the surprise release of 60 million barrels of oil from the strategic petroleum reserves of 28 nations sent shockwaves through global markets and left investors confused about why governments opted to jump into the market now. Meanwhile, from BusinessInsider.com, bankster gunned down in Puerto Rico in a suspected professional hit. And the last note of Econo Crash update is a video from Raw Story, Raw Replay, and the writer Chris Hedges says global revolution must begin in America. We're not going to get into that now because we're going to log on to cyberspacewar.com where the revolution in cyber war is becoming known. It is being manifest. It is being disclosed, if you will. We'll begin with the June 23rd DEF CON news purge, strategies, taxes, and Trident Tribunal. The first bit from the Associated Press, executive orders give Pentagon new cyber war guidelines. We just can't see them yet. Officials expected to announce the entire strategy soon. More on that from CNET. Ex-DHS chief warns of cyber war with hackers. That's from CBS. Yeah, maybe he's saying you don't want a war with hackers because, as we know, one in four, or how, how many was it from The Guardian just a couple weeks ago? It's at least one in four hackers is a U.S. informant. Cyber attacks grow more severe and frequent, say IT practitioners. That's from InfoSecurity. Bitcoin prices plummet on hacked exchange. That's from Threat Level, and the update from BobTuskin.com asking the question, is this malware Bitcoin theft a false flag attack on a revolutionary currency? States look to internet taxes to close budget gaps, and Righthaven loses. It's from Threat Level. Judge rules reposting entire article is fair use. Tell that to Anonymous on MediaMonarchy.com commenting about, I'm a criminal. FBI seizes web servers knocking sites offline. That's from the New York Times. $74 million scareware ring raided in Operation Trident Tribunal. And the Winklevoss twins in their appeal of Facebook settlement. That's from Reuters. Google breaks their billion visitor barrier. Billions and billions served. And the last note from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer with the video for you to check out of the robot handling the luggage at a New York City hotel. Furthermore, on cyberspacewar.com, U.S. preparing a world for cyber war games with the help of several organizations, including Lockheed Martin, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, and nearly $500 million, the United States government is currently constructing a virtual platform in which the government can simulate cyber wars and its own offensive capabilities in the cyber world without touching the actual internet. The progress of the project, called the National Cyber Range, will be mainly overseen by DARPA. Meanwhile, we can hop on board the 100-year Starship, as long as we're discussing DARPA and the National Cyber Range. And, of course, it won't spill onto the actual internet unless, you know, we're running a drill that happens to flip live, like an I-911. But the director of Technology Tactical Office at DARPA, David Nalen, makes recruitment pitches in search of those who want to do basic scientific research. A Universe Today article notes DARPA is known for its brand of blue sky science, where the scientific research they do might not have apparent and initial real-world applications. Is the reason the research remains a black project for so many years? An explanation of the name is provided in the article. Nalen has been working with NASA Ames director Pete Warden on the concept, and Nalen said they chose the name not because they actually want to send a starship on a 100-year mission to space, although that would be the ultimate goal, but they want to capture the imagination of folks who normally wouldn't think of doing research and development and tag them with something that they would be excited about. The 100-year Starship Study website, 100yss.org, requests paper abstracts to stimulate basic research that hopefully lead to future research projects. All aboard DARPA's 100-year Starship. Meanwhile, are LulzSec hacks the work of military intel? Kurt Nimmo poses the crucial question in a recent article, are LulzSec hacker attacks the work of military intelligence? There are concerted cyber-terrorism propaganda campaigns on the mainstream media here, here, and there, and there. Russia and China are names dropped as a matter of course during discussions. But Nimmo cuts to the chase, however, with the simple observation. Is it merely a coincidence so-called hacktivists who released the passwords of common folk, in addition to attacking the CIA and the FBI's InfraGuard, are engaged in this behavior just as the Senate debates weighty cybersecurity legislation? Revolutionary hacker groups are most likely newer, more sophisticated forms of 60s-style COINTELPRO operations engaged in false flag attacks. It is the Hegelian dialectic, problem, reaction, solution. The most recent act's curtain lowers on tragedy before playing out before us, and that would be shutting down the net as we know it. Internet 2. Our related updates, mission accomplished, thanks to LulzSec, draconian cybersecurity gained support. That's from blacklistednews.com and inthelie.com, alleging or posing question. I do have the question mark at the end. LulzSec member Nakomis, allegedly military counterintelligence. And from threat level, UK cops swoop in on a possible LulzSec suspect. From the Baltimore Sun, defense firms see opportunity in cyber attacks. Crisitunity, or like Rambo, the mayor of Chicagoland, says, never let a crisis go to waste. A spate of high-profile online break-ins has given defense firms at the Paris Air Show a new sales pitch, cybersecurity. Targeted by hackers looking to steal source codes, R&D information, and trade secrets, aerospace and defense firms are turning the tables on the pirates and making security a key sales argument. We see huge potential to do deals this week because of interest in cybersecurity has soared given recent events. Paul McGregor, general manager of Finmeccana UK security arm Vega Consulting Services, telling Reuters. He added that cybersecurity was now an arms race, with defense firms battling to stay one step ahead of the hackers. Information is now used as a weapon, and companies need to defend it at all costs, or they themselves could lose out on contracts if they are seen as having weak defenses. Our last couple of bits on cyberspacewar.com are thanks to, just as some of the previous stories are, my man Alan in Omaha, my main writer and editor over on cyberspacewar.com. And again, I'll mention, if you want to get involved in posting stories or writing or submitting info, mediamonarchy@gmail.com. And we hope Alan is checking out what's going down in nuclear Nebraska as we speak and wish him safety. 10 sci-fi predictions that came true. Beginning but not ending with Jules Verne. We also have Planet X and the mysterious death of Dr. Robert Harrington and Telectroscope to Televirtuality. Paul St. George rummaging in his grandmother's attic to find the papers of his great-grandfather and engineer Alex Stanhope St. George and the Telectroscope, a visual amplifier allowing people to see through a tunnel of immense length. A tunnel, the drawings implied, stretching from one side of the world to the other. The idea of the telectroscope seemed too outlandish to be possible, and yet there was something scribbled in the notes that had the ring of truth about it. More on the telectroscope. That's a mouthful. From a New York Times article from 2008. And even a sci-fi short story from the London Times of 1904. All that and so much more, my friends, is on cyberspacewar.com. Oh, but there's one more. I almost missed it. But this will lead us right back into Police State International and the terror drills and the threataganda. Iran launches second satellite. Iran launched Rasad 1 into orbit last Wednesday. I believe that's now two Wednesdays ago. There's more from Sat News Daily on what they launched and what it looks like as the stakes go up. We'll now return to MediaMonarchy.com for the rest of our show. Exercise mailed fist. Mailed, like a letter gets mailed. fist. Exercise mailed fist, the largest ever Marine Corps drill on the United States East Coast. Multiple foreign armies involved in this massive drill. And we'll take it from CNN. It's mid-June, a perfect time to visit the beach to watch porpoises play in the surf or seagulls strut the sand. Or you could watch a formation of Marine Corps warplanes darting over the shore at hundreds of miles per hour. But don't worry, the United States hasn't declared war on your family's beach house. It's just part of a major Marine Corps exercise called Exercise Mailed Fist, translation Armored Fist. The exercise is designed to test the capability of every type of Marine Corps aircraft, including Ospreys and Hornets and more. The drill will stretch and is stretching from Quantico Marine Base in Northern Virginia to the Navy's Pine Castle Bombing Range in Florida. With thousands of Marines and other service members involved, it's the biggest such drill ever on the U.S. East Coast. Exercise Mailed Fist is the first exercise of its specific kind and the largest 2nd Marine Aircraft Wing exercise conducted in recent history, yada yada, from Staff Sergeant Grillen. Hooah! Mailed Fist wasn't originally supposed to be one big exercise. Most of the exercises will take place in the skies above or near Marine bases along the North and South Carolina coasts. From Monday until Friday today, vacationers who are located near the bases will see an increase in air and ground traffic at various times throughout the week, but there should be minimal impact on activity near beaches other than occasional flyovers at relatively high altitudes. You can get more on this East Coast terror drill from the Digitel out of Myrtle Beach, from the aforementioned CNN, but also the intelhub.com, and they also have an open thread on current military movements within the continental United States. So let's get our other related police state updates. First, from AmericanThinker.com, the TSA is now storming public places 8,000 times a year. And Mother Jones, furthermore, on the TSA searching your car, subway, ferry, bus, and plane. Oh, but they've changed their policy on child pat-downs. More on that from 10news.com. But the good... It makes it quite simple. From Washington's blog, fear of terror makes people stupid. That story goes with researchers. It was published in the journal Sociological Inquiry and reprinted by Newsweek. 10 Signs That Nazis Run America, that's from disquietreservations.blogspot.com. The Patriot Act and the Quiet Death of the U.S. Bill of Rights, that's from commondreams.org. And CNN/CFR, Fareed Zakaria, asked the question, is it time to update the Constitution? But as Kurt Nimmo breaks it down, Fareed Zakaria, ostensibly of CNN, but really with the Council on Foreign Relations and the roundtable groups, and he's on the level of regurgitating the talking points through the media as a somewhat authority figure and person of placement and knowledge. He puts the word out. Homeland Security's big business and growing. And you can go to Fox News and learn more about that. However, allgov.com getting into the extension of FBI Director Mueller's term, a rare occurrence. Is it a rare occurrence? We've only had, 10 FBI directors? And one of them stayed there forever because he had blackmail material on everyone. Let's speculate for a moment on Mueller. I think I'm gonna stay. You wouldn't want me to talk about, well, Vancouver police to use facial recognition technology. That's biometrics in riot investigation. We discussed the hockey riots, and we'll discuss it one more time in just a few minutes. But the Marine reservist detained near the Pentagon that we reported for you, breaking news last week, was detained, and we said, all surprise, surprise, he's a military guy. They're now, sources say, linking him to the spate of military building shootings that were going on in D.C. over the last year or so. More on that from my favorite, NationalTerrorAlert.com. They never met a false flag psychological military operation they didn't love and want to scare you about. So you have to pay attention to those outlets to see what kind of fear they're pumping. Wrongly convicted in Illinois, they've spent a total of 926 years in prison. Wrongly convicted. Meanwhile, real criminals killed 14. And this is just Illinois that we're talking about in a specific area. Oh, God. Two arrested in alleged Seattle terror plot. More on that from KABC, but that leads us quite well to the last bit on our Police State International updates and exercise mailed fist. Extremists finding fertile ground in the Northwest. With its jagged peaks, glistening lakes, and lush valleys, the inland Northwest, stretching from eastern Washington to Montana's Glacier National Park, is a stunningly beautiful and remote part of the country. It's also a cradle for sometimes violent anti-government activity, a reputation most recently rekindled by the search for David Burgert, the former Kalispell militia leader accused of opening fire on sheriff's deputies on a remote logging road in Lolo National Forest. Homegrown terrorism. You are the terrorist. And yes, we've made it to the news purge. With the remaining 18 or so minutes of this episode, 222, triple twos, it's the news purge. The ugly long list of headlines, but it contains videos and supplemental links and flashbacks and all the things that I try and craft into every post in the Media Monarchy Kingdom that is simple and clean and informative and easy to use. The 623 News Purge is titled Breaking Fun, and that was, if I didn't mention it, our opening track that we heard on this episode 222 from Sons and Daughters and their new record Mirror Mirror. Breaking Fun begins, as most news purges do in the alphabetical sense, with 9/11 updates. The Daily Mail reports, U.S. officially drops all charges against Osama bin Laden. Let's take a look at this. This seems vaguely important. And they issued a null prosecute order, meaning do not prosecute. Typical once a defendant is deceased. A U.S. judge has dismissed all criminal charges against Osama bin Laden following the al-Qaeda leader's death in a military raid in Pakistan. U.S. District Court Judge Lewis Kaplan, who had been presiding over the bin Laden case in Manhattan Federal Court, issued an order called null prosecute, which means do not prosecute in Latin, a typical legal move once a defendant is deceased. It closed the case after 13 years. Bin Laden was indicted back in 1998 in the Southern District of New York for his role in the al-Qaeda attack on the U.S. embassies in Tanzania and Kenya, which killed more than 200 people, including a dozen Americans. The indictment was later revised to charge bin Laden in the dual bombings of two American embassies in East Africa that killed 224 on August 7, 1998, and in the suicide attack on the USS Cole in 2000. None of the charges involved 9/11. U.S. officially drops all charges against international family, quote-unquote, black sheep, Emmanuel Goldstein. But the story that's supposedly new now, and that's why it was trending at the beginning of the show on Google News, is that they found a cell phone connected to Osama's courier. And Osama wanted to change Al-Qaeda's name for marketing reasons. That's from the Telegraph. He wanted to change it from Al-Qaeda because, you know, from a marketing standpoint, over the last 10 years, people with inquisitive minds have gone online and done research for themselves and discovered that Al-Qaeda meant the base and perhaps even meant the database of Mujahideen fighters that the Central Intelligence Agency was using as part of Operation Cyclone to fund our enemies, to fight our bigger enemies, the Soviets. It also may mean the toilet. 911blogger.com, getting into everything we're doing now, was pre-planned, pre-9/11. And a man was added to the official 9/11 victims list. I believe it's only happened one other time before, but a man who died of lung disease last year was added to the official list of victims of the 9/11 attacks. This brings the official death count to 2,753. Seven in Heaven Way. Atheists complain about the New York City street sign honoring 9/11 firemen. And our last 9/11 update note from blog.games.yahoo.com. Bob Hoskins regrets making one movie in his career, and it's Super Mario Brothers, and all its bizarre pre-9/11 synchro-mysticism, and I believe I bumped it up in my queue, and it's probably waiting for me in my mailbox in all its crappy predictive programming glory. But on to the drug war. SCOTUS and all their great moves they've been making, they sided with Big Pharma in two key decisions. More on that from the Los Angeles Times. Long Island massacre sheds light on U.S. drug abuse problem. That's from Fox News. And from Raw Story, Mexican forces using the drug war to repress indigenous communities. And on to geopolitics. U.S. conducting mass surveillance against the Arab world. Again, from Raw Story and from the Deutsche Press Agency. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon of the Moonies sworn in for his second term at the building purchased on the land of the Rockefellers. Into history mystery. MyTech Pimper, P-E-M-P-E-R, age 91, passed away, the camp inmate who compiled Schindler's List. He and another person were composited into the Ben Kingsley character in the Spielberg film. But at the age of 81, Himmler's daughter still works with neo-Nazis and helps SS officers evade justice. That's from the Daily Mail. And from, again, allgov.com, judge approves largest settlement ever against the U.S. government. $3.4 billion for American Indians. It's a long and complicated story. Hip-hop mogul implicated in the first Tupac shooting, arrested on drug charges. More on that from the CBS Crime Cider. And Boston gangster Whitey Bulger arrested after 16 years on the run.
He is an avid reader with an interest in history, spends a lot of time at libraries and historic sites, and loves animals. And one more thing. According to his FBI file, James J. Whitey Bulger is a cold-blooded killer, the kind they make movies about, and they did. Tonight, after more than a decade as a fugitive, Bulger is in custody. Justice correspondent Bob Orr tells us how the FBI finally got its man.
As a career criminal, James Whitey Bulger rose to the very top of the FBI's most wanted list. But for the last 16 years, the notorious Boston mob boss was a ghost, leading authorities on a fruitless and frustrating worldwide manhunt. Despite countless tips and reported sightings from Italy to Indiana, he remained invisible. But today, there he was in federal court in Los Angeles. Bulger had finally been arrested late yesterday after he was tracked to this Santa Monica, California apartment. Richard DeLaurier is the FBI's top agent in Boston.
We have captured one of the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives, a man notorious in Boston and around the world for very serious crimes he is alleged to have committed.
Bulger headed Boston's Irish Mob, a group called the Winter Hill Gang. He's charged with 19 murders, extortion, drug dealing, and money laundering. Bulger's alleged gangland activities and explosive temper were the inspiration for Jack Nicholson's character, Martin Scorsese's movie, The Departed.
You dump them in the marsh.
But the film's popularity in 2006 did not help the FBI find its man. Public appeals and wanted posters brought no results until this week.
Have you seen this woman? The FBI.
On Monday, the FBI unveiled this ad focusing on Bulger's longtime girlfriend, Catherine Grieg. The spot, airing on daytime television and aimed at female viewers, described Grieg and her numerous plastic surgeries. Within 24 hours, authorities got a very specific tip that Bulger and Grieg were living in this apartment building. The FBI lured Bulger outside and arrested him. Then they entered the building, arrested Grieg, and confiscated nearly 30 guns and hundreds of thousands of dollars stashed in the apartment. Neighbors knew the couple as Charles and Carol Gasco. They lived in apartment 303, and for much of the past 15 years, it seems, had paid their $1,100 a month rent in cash. But sources say Bulger, armed with multiple passports, also moved around, reportedly spending time in the Caribbean, Fort Lauderdale, and London. The Bulger case has long been an embarrassment for the FBI. In the mid-70s, Bulger became an informant for the Bureau, providing information about a rival gang and even some of his own mob soldiers. But FBI agent John Connolly, assigned to handle Bulger, eventually went to work for the mob boss. Connolly was convicted for racketeering. In fact, it was Connolly's warning to Bulger that he was about to be indicted in 1995 that sent the mobster into hiding.
Now, sources tell us Bulger at first was verbally combative when he was arrested, but he didn't resist. Now we're told he is talking a bit to federal authorities, and Scott, Bulger will be returned to Boston to face trial. Thanks, Bob.
Just like so many things in the media show you what really happens in the world, like the news lies to you, but movies somehow tell the truth, like The Departed, showing cops working for the mob, working with the criminals. On to media and memes. And thanks to my man James Corbett of CorbettReport.com for sending me this story from the Singularity Hub. New Japanese pop idol shocks fans with the news. She's not real. It's a digital composite tying in with a marketing scheme and viral campaign from a candy company. Marilyn Monroe's old clothes fetch $8 million, way over predicted at a recent auction. And Lost TV show actor Doug Hutchinson marries his 16-year-old girlfriend, and the Hangover Part 2 movie tattoo infringement lawsuit that we've mentioned over the last few weeks, I find it kind of an interesting angle on all these new things that are happening in our new digital world order. The Hangover tattoo lawsuit settles for an undisclosed amount, and bad news. And that leads us from media, and it will lead us into worse. Clarence Clemons, the big man, the saxophonist for Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, dies at the age of 69. Ryan Dunn, one of the guys in Jackass, dies in a drunken car accident at the age of 34. I'll be 34 this year. But 10 possible explanations for the drop in the U.S. crime rate starts the murder and mayhem. Chemical suicides popular in Japan, increasing in the U.S. That's from the New York Times. New Hampshire man dies by self-immolation in a courthouse protest. And we return to British Columbia, where the couple will explain their kiss amidst the Vancouver riots.
Black and gold Bruins mania ruled in Boston today. Up to 1 million fans lined the Fremont Parade route to celebrate the Bruins' victory over the Vancouver Canucks this week to win hockey's Stanley Cup for the first time in some 39 years. You may recall the scene in Vancouver after the home team's defeat Wednesday night was quite different. A series of violent incidents punctuated by a kiss. Elaine Quijano has the story.
When the Vancouver Canucks lost to the Boston Bruins and angry Vancouver fans rioted, Alexandra Thomas and her boyfriend Scott Jones, who were just trying to leave the area, were trapped between police and rioters.
I was starting to get really frightened because I'd never experienced anything like that before, and it's really scary, you know?
Amateur video captured that moment as police rushed in and Alexandra was knocked to the ground.
I don't know why we weren't being aggressive towards them or anything like that, but then eventually they passed over us, and that's when we were on the ground.
At that moment, a photographer captured this image as Scott Jones comforted his frightened girlfriend with a kiss. The photo ricocheted around the internet. As the image went viral, half a world away in Australia, Hannah Jones thought she recognized the man.
I went over to Scott's Facebook page and all his friends were commenting and saying, oh my God, you know, do you know you're on the news? Do you know what's happened? You're famous. And I was like, oh my God, it actually is my brother.
But on Twitter, users speculated about the story behind the image. Staged or real, tweeted one person. Are they kissing or struggling, tweeted another. Now the couple of 6 months wants to set the record straight.
I didn't pose that way, so I think people will be able to see that it's just a moment that happened to be on camera and that it's not embarrassing at all. It's actually a really beautiful shot.
A kiss that wasn't just a kiss. Elaine Quijano, CBS News, New York.
You must remember this. Quickly now, our last two areas on the June 23rd News Purge Breaking Fun. It's Obamasiya and the War Horrors updates. And we have the video for you of President Obama addressing the suckers, I mean the nation, on the Afghanistan drawdown. That's right, Obama to start Afghan troop drawdown. But even fake progressive left talking heads like Rachel Maddow on the General Electric Microsoft News Network says the Afghan drawdown is no change in plans. But a U.S. prison in Afghanistan has 10 times as many prisoners as Gitmo. And did you see the other viral video about Obama, the baby whisperer? It is cute to see a baby stop crying when the president holds her, and you almost want to succumb to the niceness of it all. Happy, shiny, new morning in America. But it's garbage and it's a lie, and it's Obama the baby silencer with a link to a video of dead kids in just Libya. Just take that one for example. 212,000 U.S. vets have traumatic brain injuries. A quarter of all federal contracts go to 10 companies because Eisenhower's worst fears came true. We invent enemies to buy the bombs. That's from The Guardian. Meanwhile, Ron Paul wins 2012 GOP straw poll in New Orleans. That's from Reuters. And we close out with West Virginia worry as West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin says it's time to leave Afghanistan, and we get that from WVMetroNews.com, but CBS even interviewed him. Manchin looking to change the mission in Afghanistan.
Well, let me ask you, first of all, Senator, this idea of taking the 30,000 surge troops out by September 2012. What do you think of that?
Well, I have not talked about the numbers. I would not criticize any of the numbers. Bringing one person back home is welcome. I'm looking at changing the mission. Scott, I truly have thought about this very long and hard. I think that we have a war on terror. That was how we began this war in 2002. That's where we should go back to. Sitting there trying to build a nation that does not have an economy, does not have infrastructure, and by all accounts has a corrupt government. How long would we have to be there, and if how many troops would it take in order to be successful? I think the war on terror, we sent a strong, a loud, clear message.
I wish I could get excited about kind of a feeble attempt to go anti-war, but that's just pussyfooting around and it's not going to do it, and I want so much more from my home state. But he's serving alongside John D. Rockefeller IV, so I don't know what the hell we're supposed to expect, but I want more from my home state of West Virginia. Couple related notes, again from WVMetroNews.com. The Department of Environmental Protection responds to a Fayette County mining concern. That is my home county. And the way we began this show with the quote that hopefully you caught, and I love it, it's one of my favorite lines ever. Radio reminds me of my home far away. West Virginia celebrated its 148th birthday on June 20th. And we get background for you on LoganBanner.com and a piece getting into how the Civil War, of course, was key to West Virginia statehood. That and so much more from DailyMail.com. And that's how we end this jam-packed episode 222 from MediaMonarchy.com. June 24th, 2011. I want to thank all the folks who helped support this show. We are approaching 1,000 followers on twitter.com/MediaMonarchy, and we have cracked 2,000-plus subscribers on youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. And a huge thanks to all the folks out there because, of course, as we said, as we try and relay so many ways, we can't do this alone. We have to get together and teach each other how to fish. Like I said, my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, June 24th, 2011, episode 222, reminding you, as always, my friends, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165. Portland, Oregon, 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.